You know, it's like smart money is finally getting into the sector. It's not just central bank buying, in my opinion. And so it's trading beautifully as a commodity. So then you have to say to yourself, okay, if I missed the boat on physical gold, which, you know, I mean, I only have a 1% position myself on physical gold. I've got about 7.5% in silver. Then you got to buy gold equities here. That's what you do. And you're going to get tremendous leverage to the price of gold.
John Fenech, how's it going, man?
Hey, how are you, Andy?
I'm doing well. Interesting enough, the last time we talked, mid-February, the market was really at a low, and my portfolio was at a low. But what was interesting, too, is that's usually when you see bottoms, if you would, just a lot of despair. And we briefly talked about that. And since then, things have really started catching a bit, everything, really, commodities related. And I think this is starting at a high level with the Fed and direction of the Fed and the possibilities of easy money, or at least that's what the market is anticipating. What's your high-level view, let's start there, of where things sit and how this impacts commodities and commodity stocks?
Yeah. So, correct. We were talking, I think, 10 days or 10 calendar days or so before the low. And that was, to me, when Newmont got downgraded on February 26th by whatever analyst that was. And so, you know, basically, we're looking at a really nice rally here because gold is just ripping. It's not rallying, it's ripping. And it is going to rip even higher on anything that would be a black swan event or even something that would be kind of normal, like kind of abnormal, I guess, obvious to me, which is this Russia-Ukraine situation is getting worse. It's not getting better. And now we're looking at this huge bill that's just sitting there in the U.S. and it's being debated back and forth, right, with Johnson and all the rest. And so it's like, what if Russia prevails? The market is not factoring that in at all, to me, in the broad market and in prices. But gold loves fear. And so the fear trade would then ignite, and then you have gold and silver just ripping higher, in my opinion, probably a near-jerk reaction down on the news of something like that. But I mean, and I'm not hoping for this at all. I'm just saying you have to prepare as an investor for this. And the market's just greedy right now. They're not prepared. If you're in tech or AI or whatever, you're not prepared for bad news, in my opinion, because you're chasing stocks, right? We all know that the S&P last year cranked, but it cranked with the Magnificent Seven leading the way, which we call narrow leadership, right? And then if you separate that away from the other 493 stocks, it didn't look so good. And so that's what investors really need to understand. And I don't think the average person does. So getting back to your question, the Fed in March was very dovish, for our sector. They implied being a key word, that we're going to get three cuts in general this year, probably starting June 12th. And I'm not sure I believe June 12th would be the first one. We'll see. You know, we're going to have to look at data just like Powell says, right? We've got April 5th with non-farm payrolls, April 10th with CPI. These are incredibly important, you know, data points. And I always coach my clients that you have to, you know, watch this. You can't just sit back in your chair now that we're rallying and get comfortable because the Fed has told us they're data dependent, right? And we've been saying this on Kitco and other large shows since the beginning of 2022. We actually took a different position that your listeners can look at PDAC in 2022. And I said, look, this is going to be higher rates for longer. The Fed means business. And David Lynn turned to me and said, like, that's interesting. Everyone else I interviewed in the gold space has said that, you know, we should probably see cuts by the fall of 2022. And I was like, that's just not happening. I would love to see that happen. But, you know, you can kind of, if you follow the Fed as closely as I do, you can kind of see when a change occurs. To me, that change was November of last year. I went on Kitco again with Paul Harris this time in Zurich and said, like, this CPI miss was very dovish for our sector. Now, prices didn't move, as you know. Right away. It takes months sometimes. This is not unusual. It's very painful for us as investors. But if you look at the 08 crisis, right? Look at when GDXJ took off. It wasn't in Lehman. It wasn't in the fall of 08. It was somewhere around January of 2009, ripped higher, I want to say about 180% from January of 2009, so July of 2009. So in 6 to 7 months, you made huge money just owning an ETF. It's not like you had to go out there and pick stocks, right? We're getting to a place now with GDX closing over 32 that we could see a further rally in our sector, which is great news. But we're still not at a point, I think, where you can just sit back and relax. You've got to, you know, do your due diligence and use more of a rifle approach than just buying anything with an ink hole in it.
Yeah, well, it's okay. So you just gave a lot of information, and I think probably a good key takeaway, and I want to somewhat paraphrase, and I do believe this, it's almost like gold and silver are both, they're ripping higher, but it's this wall of worry. And it's a wall of worry that investors are having, meaning, okay, here we have a breakout in gold specifically, and silver is approaching one in my mind. Well, all commodities are approaching one in my mind, but it's where retail investors make the biggest mistake, or people that don't have the experience, such as yourself and myself, make the biggest mistake is they see this, oh, it's already ran, so it's just going to come back again, or I'm afraid, so I'm not going to jump in, as opposed to this is taking the whole picture, if you would, and saying this is a breakout. So what are your comments on that, the wall of worry?
Yeah. Well, first, let me take a piece of what you just said there. What I would encourage people to do is don't pull up a 1 year chart or a 3 year chart. Pull up a 20 year chart. So it includes 08, 09. See where some of these things were trading then. And then look at 2016. That's another important rally, in my opinion. A lot of people disagree with me there, but I made 149% in 2016. It was my best year ever. So I feel this is like a 2016 where things got so bombed out, so short, you know, not visibly short to the public, but what we call naked short, where these entities out there, which I won't name on the show right now, but I am speaking on this topic later this month at a conference, and I will names. You know, basically it's just a really terrible situation where you have this huge disconnect between gold and the gold stocks, just as an example, but then you have a problem exacerbated by these entities that are naked shorting gold juniors, or gold, even just like the names like Newmont. How do you think Newmont got to 29? Like, I really don't think that it was just disinterest. I mean, I could be wrong, but it's not impossible for these companies or banks to really go after some of these names because they're illiquid. Not Newmont, of course, but like a lot of these gold mid-tiers, silver mid-tiers, there's not a lot of volume when compared to other sectors. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, people see 3, 4, 5 million shares. They're like, wow, it's a lot of volume. But, it's not a lot of volume to the broad market expert or trader. So, you know, our sector is very thin. It's going to get a lot better. That's the encouraging thing I'll say to listeners is that the constant problem I get or question I get from investors, I should say, is John, I like that stock, but there's no liquidity. True. Like 2 months ago, no liquidity. Right now, there's a lot of liquidity, even in some of these juniors that haven't traded much at all recently, right? And that's what I saw in 2020, is that a lot of these juniors got written up by Eric Sprott or got written up on some podcast just like this, and they just flew. And I mean, going from like 10 cents to a dollar within 3 months. Crazy, crazy performance. But through that, you know, you get volume. And so you can get liquidity in these names. So I always encourage people, you know, if you own something, it's important to always go back, I'd say at least on a monthly basis, and look at your portfolio closely and understand what are these things, what are my recent addition, what have I held for 3 or 4 years since the last rally in 2020 that I'm kind of doing this with. Because crossing your fingers isn't a strategy. You've got to call that company or work with someone like myself that knows the CEO and that can help you decide, like, you know, do you want to hold this? It's totally the client's call, not my call. But at least I can provide some research on, okay, this is a bit delayed because they're in Mexico, right? There's a Mexican election coming up in the fall. We don't know anything until that's going to happen with this particular stock. So that's what's holding you back, right? Like there's that applies to a couple of hundred names, I'd say, right? You know, it's not like a small number. So
yeah, Totally. It's funny you say that because I was on the phone with two different CEOs just last week. And they were literally like, well, there was this problem in this jurisdiction and that problem ended 6 months ago. And the market's just finally now figuring that out. So, but what I really want to talk about, and you, two things you really hit on, and I couldn't emphasize this enough, is I used to be a former commodities futures trader. And I see juniors very much like these call options, like call options, buying call options on gold or silver or oil, whatever. And what I say that is, I remember, I want to say it was 1998 or 1999, and gold was getting hammered. And it had a low of 250, just absolutely hammered. And there was, air quotes, no liquidity. And the liquidity was actually, if there was liquidity, it was on the short side. And I got a break. And my buddy and I, my trading buddy and I, we had our own, if you would, our own account. And we just bought a ton of gold calls, out of the money gold calls, with a lot of time, probably we layered it 6 to 12 months out, just because they were so cheap. And we're just like, there's no way gold's going to stay in 250. That was just our theory. Just, these are cheap. And then gold caught a bid, and I forget what the story was. And literally within 2 to 3 weeks, gold ran from 250 to well over $300. And we made a ton of money.
Wow.
What I'm saying is not to pat myself on the back, but that's really junior gold. It's like, okay, you have an asset here, but think of it as shrinking, if you would, as time goes on, unless there's news that are going to make it move. And what you need to do is rotate that, maybe as opposed to rotating with time, but rotate out of it into another stock that is going to move because of, you know, some news that's going to hit or whatever, and the liquidity will come if it's a good company.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
For sure. Let me just go back a second and say that as a value investor, I like looking at Mexico right now. I don't think Mexico is a Congo. I think it's like basically a problem because of the obvious, right? It's like open pit mining is under scrutiny. However, when you talk to some of these CEOs, you know, they're talking to their governors in that part of Mexico, and these certain parts of Mexico are very pro mining, and they want to get this over the finish line, meaning that permits will come. They're just coming later, right? And so that's what you have to factor into your decision-making. I'm tracking Sonora Gold right now, SMOFF. I'm tracking Silver Tiger, SLVTF. I just bought some of that recently in full disclosure. And these are companies that are in that belt, right? And they're run by senior guys, 30 years plus each. And so like I'm trying to find beaten up names in a commodity they like in silver that are trading like they're getting thrown out the window because Mexico will never be okay again, which I think is ludicrous. We thought the same with Peru 2 or 3 years ago, correct? Because Castillo was a nut job and now he's in jail.
Right.
So now he's been in jail for 16 months and yet Peruvian juniors are still trading like he's like running the show. It's amazing. So we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about silver. I'm sure you'll bring it up.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk a little bit about jurisdictions because Ecuador comes to mind, if you would. And they've had a new government. Well, I say that relatively new, I want to say, but they've become very mining friendly. And if you want, so mining friendly that the president, I believe, is showing up to some of these conferences. So what I'm, that should be a key indicator for the investors looking at Ecuador, companies that are looking to get exposure into Ecuador or have a mine stake in Ecuador, or looking to explore in Ecuador or whatever have you. Something like that is something that I'd be really interested in as well. Let's talk a little bit about then filter down to some of the juniors. They are running. Let's first start with gold because traditionally, correct me if I'm wrong, gold would lead. So let's talk about gold first.
With regard to gold, I mean, we've correctly called gold now for a couple of years. I mean, I was very adamant last year that 1790 to 1800 would hold. I said that in two interviews at VREC in 2023. And then it did hold, right? And then it got close to breaking that 1800 level again, if you remember, right before October 7th. And then October 7th happened, and then it has not looked back. That should tell you something about the state of the world. You know, it's like smart money is finally getting into the sector. It's not just central bank buying, in my opinion. And so it's trading beautifully as a commodity. So then you have to say to yourself, okay, if I missed the boat on physical gold, which, you know, I mean, I only have a 1% position myself on physical gold. I've got about 7.5% in silver. Then you got to buy gold equities here. That's what you do. And you're going to get tremendous leverage to the price of gold. And I mean, if I didn't own so much GDX, Andy, I'd own Newmont straight up right now, even in wherever it is, 36, 37, it's run off the bottom for 29 shares. That is a $50 stock at some point this year, in my opinion. So you're still going to, you know, clip a really nice coupon and get some capital appreciation there. I think Agnico, for my money, is probably the best looking gold senior right now. AEM, it's just broken out again. And it looks absolutely beautiful from a chart perspective. Very well run company, beat earnings, I think by 6 or 8 cents, you know, recently. And so then, you know, we're looking down the cap structure as well. Now, you know, we're not just buying seniors. We're looking at juniors. And I'll give you your listeners a couple. I just met with Treasury Metals. It's on my YouTube channel, Fennec Commodities Report. So I met with them the day before Good Friday. So March 28th, it's very recent. Don Durrett is a friend of mine. You know, we co-interviewed Jeremy Wyeth, the CEO there, and really grilled. We really asked a lot of difficult questions in this series that I'm doing, because I see a lot of fluff out there, right? And it's like people that have real money want to know, what is the timeline to production? What is the timeline to construction? Like, what a cash balance do you have now, not as of Jan 1? Like, these are just normal questions to ask a company. We're not trying to be difficult. Jeremy handled them all like a champ, you know, and that's what you want to see. When we get the CEO off the air, we then take 5 minutes and talk amongst ourselves and just say, hey, that looks really interesting, or this doesn't look that good, or whatever. But we both agreed that Treasury Metals, TSRMF, is a steal here. They've got 3 million ounces of gold in Ontario. If you look at what just happened with Argonaut, they're not super far from Magino. So, you know, it's like they get taken out. There's going to be a lot of takeouts when you have 3 million ounces of gold. I'm not suggesting that Treasury is on the takeout list this month or this quarter or anything like that. I'm saying that Jeremy has built a team behind him that he could actually build that mine. And that's what's different about Treasury Metals versus some other juniors I track or own, is that they don't have the teams to go out there and build this. So they have to sell at some point, right? Jeremy could actually get it to production. They're right near a highway. They've got great, you know, infrastructure. So that's one we liked. Another one, I just started a track called Dakota Gold, and that symbol DC. I'm trying to find some things that have liquidity with, you know, a good listing, and this checks a lot of boxes. South Dakota Gold, you know, chairman is Bob Quartermain, who's just a superstar. He and I are both keynote speakers at this conference in April 29th and 30th in DC. So I'll get to meet him for the first time. But basically that stock is just trading very low versus the peer group right now. I think there was a big seller out there towards the beginning of the year or the end of the year last year. And sometimes people get spooked by charts, Andy. I mean, you got to call someone like Jonathan at the firm and just ask questions, right? I mean, they've been telegraphing that Richmond Hill is going to have a resource in weeks, not months, right? So like, what's the deal? Just put a position on, and in a hot gold market, what if the report is good, right? It's like, that's what investing is. Part of it is timing. Part of it is, you know, assessing risk. And yeah, and you know, at 235 here, who cares if it goes to 2? The upside's 4 probably, right? So it's like, always look at a stock from a risk reward perspective. I don't care if I buy it at 235 or 225 or 2, I'm going to hold it to 4. So I'm going to make a lot of money on that type of position.
Yep. Got it. Okay. Let's, so we have gold leading here, and I would agree with everything you just said. if you would. And probably my take on that is that's exactly what I've done, just to our listeners, is I'll call the CEO, or I'll, you know what, I'll email them first, and then I'll send them a Twitter, and I'll just say, hey, I'm a prospective investor. When is a good time to call you? And just my experience has been they answer the email and they pick up the phone. So well done. And that's my suggestion to anybody listening and viewing. Let's talk about silver here. And so silver is really, I think, the interesting play right now in precious metals, because of the upside is really much more greater, I think, than gold. And it hasn't moved like gold has, if you would. If we had it, we're right at 26 now. You're on the record saying we need to get above, or we need to break through 26. And then we're going to go to 30 probably really quick. And then there's some more resistance at 30 again, just looking at charts. Tell me about that. What are your thoughts on silver, where it's at right now?
So since our last interview in mid-February, I mean, we've put a lot of positions on silver juniors particularly. And I've used SILJ, which is an ETF, to get access to the mid-tiers. Instead of just buying Hecla or Quorum or First Majestic, I'm just using SILJ as a nice kind of anchor in my portfolio. And I would say that when I look at silver names, Peru comes to mind again. That's a jurisdiction that is known for silver and copper, right? It's run by a woman now who's not oppressive like Castillo was. And there's just rock bottom prices on some of these stocks. I mean, if you look at Silver X, for example, AGXPS, Jose and I had dinner at PDAC in March. I mean, I asked them some very difficult questions about the restructuring last year that they had, about, you know, the future of the company. Where does he want to go in terms of production growth? He answered all the questions just as I would hope, you know, and he's a very straight shooter, you know, and that's what you need in a bad market, is you need someone like him to answer your questions so you can sleep at night. In a good market, it takes care of itself, right? So I think this is a producing company, not just an explorer developer, that is going to 5 to 6 million ounces. I mean, they just put out some news, you know, a couple of weeks ago that they found another silver zone that part of their, you know, main project. So that's always positive, right? Because you're not getting something, you know, hundreds of miles away. It's right there. So they're building a complex, in my opinion. And the stock's trading at 14.5 cents US. It's ridiculous. Aftermath Silver is another one in Peru. You know, they came out with, that ticker is AAGFF. They came out with tremendous news February 29th, Andy. It basically said that the manganese that they have on site there is battery grade. That means 99.9%. That is very unusual. And the market kind of just like missed it, I think. The stock ran from like 16 to 19, and then it just faded back to 14, and now it's right back to 16. And I'm just like blown away that this isn't bigger news. I can just say that that's our second largest silver position. So we, you know, in full disclosure, had a decent amount there. But I do that because I think Ralph as a CEO is a good leader. I think Michael as a founder is just a great, you know, he's created wealth for clients, right? Like, you know, the last deal that he did, he sold for about $130 million to Kinross. So like you look for that kind of backdrop, right? Like you look for people that had success, and then why wouldn't they be able to replicate it again? They've been doing it for 25 or 30 years. You know, that's one of the key things I said in our last interview, is I really do look at, you know, management as a key thing. Management and jurisdiction to me are number one and number two.
Right. Got it. So let's talk about, industrial commodities here. I am a huge fan of both nickel and copper, but probably more copper, if you would. I just don't see copper staying at these prices, and even in the short term. I think the reason why we've had depressed industrial metals is just because of the uncertainty of the economics, if you would, national economics, that is, and possibly even China. I think that's resolving itself. And the time to buy these things, let's assume a worst case scenario that we are going to be in a recession. That's when you should be start buying these stocks, if you would. And they've already been so incredibly beat up. And when I say stocks, is not the commodity itself, which you certainly could, but it's just the equities that produce these commodities. But what are your thoughts on copper companies or copper, nickel, and the like, and the companies?
Well, copper, just from a macro perspective, had a terrible year last year. It finished down, which is insane, given that there's so much talk about the need for copper, right?
Right.
So when Goldman Sachs, when I spoke at Beaver Creek last year, I mentioned Goldman the month before had just said, we expect copper to be at 15,000 a metric ton by December of 25. So that was looking out about 2.5 years, right? I don't know exactly where we are today, but let's say we're under 10,000. We're definitely under 10,000. So that implies another 50% growth from here, right? And just the copper price in less than 2 years. So what does that mean for copper stocks? It means a lot of upside. And this also implies that we're going to have a softer landing, right? Not necessarily a soft landing, but like copper needs a softer landing, in my opinion, to really frag. So that's a risk, right? Because we don't know yet. We don't know what the Fed's got up their sleeve. We want to see, you know, some type of normalcy play out, especially in a market like China, which is a wild card always. You know, they consume a ton of copper. But as I said on other shows recently, you don't just need China, you know, in the copper story. You can still make a lot of money in copper stocks without China going off the rails in terms of consumption, in my opinion. Some names we like there, two little juniors that probably aren't tracked very closely, VR Resources, VRRCF. Mike Gunning is a PhD. Again, 30 years in the business. This is what I look for. Guys that are super smart, you know, 3 decades in the business. They've got a great deposit in Nevada called New Boston, which has gotten the attention of Brian Lenny and Robert Sinn and a bunch of my peers. In fact, when they were speaking recently at PDAC, they were telling a friend of mine that was like their number one pick in copper for 2024. I think this is going to be a great year for them. They also have a project in Canada, which is focused on diamonds, but there hasn't been a significant diamond discovery in Canada in like 25 years, Michael says. So it's like, they've got two ways to win. I always love that. They just got rid of their rare earth assets for like $3.6 million, I think. So again, non-dilutive, right? Way to get rid of a non-core asset, not kill everyone that's an existing shareholder. Mike's just a smart guy. So yeah, I like that stock.
That's
huge. And Canadian Critical Minerals is another one with a great leader, Ian Burzins, you know, RIINF. Look at the news flow on this, guys. I mean, they did a deal with New Gold, NGD, where they're basically, you know, able to sell like a lot of their stockpile to New Gold. And New Gold will, you know, they have a trucking company in between the two projects, right? And this is New Gold's New Afton project. But they've extinguished all of their debt. They've done a really good job of cleaning up the balance sheet. That was the overhang on the stock last year and in prior years, right? Because when you're carrying debt as a junior, that's scary because it scares the market to say, well, if you can't raise cash and you've got this debt, you can just go bankrupt. It's a fact. But Ian, you know, found a way, you know, to his credit, to get out of the woods here. And now the stock's up like 50% in the last few weeks. But it's got a long way to go. This thing was trading, I think, 9 or 10 cents. You know, it's trading at, you know, 3 now. So, I mean, you know, with copper at $5 back, you know, what was that, 18 months ago, 24 months ago?
Yeah.
You know, bottom line is, I think we're getting to $5 copper again within 12 months. And so that's what you do with investing. You say, okay, the management hasn't changed on this. The story's only gotten better. Yet the story is 67% off. It was at 9, now it's at 3. It's like, that's the kind of stuff we, you know, we'll say, okay, well, maybe I bought it at 6 and now I'm going to buy a triple position at 3. So my average cost is 4. And so then if it goes back to 9, we're going to kill it.
Right. All right. Well, let's wrap up here. Tell me where you're speaking at the end of the month. Tell me about the conference. And then tell me how people can reach you if they want you to help them with investing.
Yeah, sure. So our website's fenixconsulting.com. That'll be in the show notes, along with my email address, john.fenix@yahoo.com is the easiest way. The conference that we're doing I'm an advisor to this conference in Washington, D.C. It's April 29 and 30, and it's focused on energy transition. So some of the copper names I mentioned, you know, are going to be there. Some of nickel names like Terry Lynch over at Power Nickel and I are doing a presentation together on strengths and weaknesses of the junior market. So I think that'll be pretty cool. He's a really sharp guy. He does a lot for our sector, by the way. I think people should take a look at some of his recent work. We have about 60 companies there, Andy. So it should be really well attended from retail. And the conference organizers are the same people that organized Deeper Creek. So I think there's a lot of credibility there.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Yes. I'll put all this in the show notes and any parting thoughts, that you might have, between now and the end of the month.
Yeah. Don't sell too early because, this is just getting started, right? Like it doesn't feel like it because some of your names are up 30 to 50%, but again, go back to long-term charts, see where these things were, you know, years ago. They're probably never getting back there. Okay. You know, probably and never, ever. So that's one thing to be, you know, just have a reality check, but you know, what if it retraces half of the way, you know, if a stock goes from 20 to two, if it goes back to 10, you're going to be very, very.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. As always, John, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Of course, Andy. Thanks.